was always analyzing how people reacted to his environment. He inhaled it. Check any flowers at the house? We did. They were loaded with poison. They were sent to his mother. He was the one who put them in water and must have gotten enough of a whiff to kill him. Matt had hoped for something easier to track down, but the flowers didn't seem to have come from any local florist. And Mo was dead and couldn't tell them who delivered the box of roses. Nora had no idea either. He rose and moved to the door. Thanks, Whit. Got a Jane Doe that you might be interested in. About the right age. Drowned. Natural causes, looks like. Matt's fingers tightened on the door handle. Hair color? Light red with gray. The right hair color. Can I see her? Sure. Whit drained his coffee cup and rose. Matt followed him down the hall to a room that held the cadavers in cold storage. When Whit pulled out a drawer, Matt drew in a deep breath. The rasp of the zipper sliding open on the body bag sounded loud in the cavernous room. He focused on a spot on the wall, probably the spray from a soda can. Well? Whit prodded him on the arm. Matt looked down into the woman's face. His gaze took in the sharp nose, the narrow-set eyes, the wide forehead. It's not her. Relief and disappointment did a two-step. Why did he even think it might be? Only Whit knew of his secret search. Thanks, my friend.
No problem.
Whit zipped the bag closed before shoving the drawer back into place. Back outside, Matt drew in a lungful of clean air, but the taint of death stayed with him. His cell phone rang at his belt, and he grabbed it. He noticed he'd missed several calls while he was in the dungeon. Beitler. Blake's voice came over the phone.
Where you at, partner? I've been trying to reach you.
Talking to the coroner. My cell doesn't work in the basement.
Your grandma called. She said she saw something the night Mo Honegger died.
I'll meet you in front of headquarters.
Trudy probably was one of his missed calls. He put Ajax into the back seat, then drove to the sheriff's office where he slowed down long enough to allow Blake to jump into the passenger seat.
She say what she saw?
Matt asked Blake. Blake shrugged.
Someone cut through her corn patch, knocked down some stalks.
Might be kids.
Maybe. She seemed adamant she had to talk to you.
She was always adamant. Matt drove west out of Rockville. When he passed the road toward Nora's house and the other Amish farmlands, he wondered if Hannah had stayed in the community or gone home. And why had she come? She'd never explained. Blake ran his window down.
How's Gina?
Fine. You two need to work it out.
I'm working on it.
Matt's grip tightened on the steering wheel.
Is it true, Blake?
His partner didn't look at him.
Is what true?
You're having an affair.
That's none of your business.
Matt closed his mouth. He wanted to ask where Blake had gotten the money for the ring, but he feared to hear the answer. If Gina's suspicion wasn't true, wouldn't Blake deny the charge? He turned down his grandmother's road. Trudy's house was the only one on this narrow way. She came to the door before Blake's raised fist could fall on the door.
"Don't just stand there. Come in," she said, standing aside so they could enter. "Not the dog."
She pointed her finger at Ajax. "Stay." Ajax's tail drooped, but he settled down with his head on his paws and a mournful look in his eyes.
"I'll be right back, boy."
Matt pressed his lips together but didn't say anything. This was an old disagreement, and one he wasn't going to win. Trudy's ways were set by 72 years of footsteps encased in concrete. She wore her gray hair loose on her shoulders. Even at 72, her skin held a pink bloom. Tiny wrinkles crouched at her eyes and around her mouth, but she didn't look her age. The flowing red caftan gave her frame an elegance that matched the proud tilt to her head. Matt followed her past stacks of old newspapers and magazines. He tried to clear out the clutter for years before finally giving up. Trudy was who she was. There was no changing her. She settled in a worn chenille rocker. He and Blake took the matching sofa.
The crocheted doilies on the arms and the back of the sofa were starched and spotless.
"You've been neglecting me, Matthew," she said, fixing her blue gaze on him. "It's been 3 weeks and 4 days since you were here last."
Sheesh, did she keep a calendar?
"I've been working a lot of overtime. You know how it is when there's been a murder. It will calm down soon."
The guilt was a familiar companion. His job demanded so much of him. There were only so many hours in the day.
He took out his pen and notebook.
"So you said someone trampled your garden?"
"More than trampled. Destroyed it." She began to rock. "And there's white powder on the ground."
He and Blake exchanged alarmed glances.
"Don't smell it. Mo died from inhaling strychnine.
Hang on."
He called headquarters and his boss promised to send out a car.
"We'll get it checked and cleaned up," he told his grandmother.
"In the meantime, stay away from it."
The coils of the chair seat screeched with Trudy's every movement. He could still hear that sound in his dreams. He would never forget the night she locked him in his room and sat outside his door, rocking and rocking. He took out his notepad and began to write.
"Footprints?
Plenty of them. All one man, I think. You can check them for yourself. They lead across the field toward Nora Honegger's house."
"Did you see anyone?" Blake put in.
"If I'd recognized someone, don't you think I would have said that right off? But I saw his truck parked down the way under the old sycamore tree by the river, just before the covered bridge."
"Make and model?"
Matt asked. "Tan. That's all I know."
Gina had said the man who followed her and Caitlin home drove a tan truck.
"Anything else?"
She stopped rocking a minute.
"I heard him whistling."
She pursed her lips again and blew out a tune.
"Like that."
Matt recognized the tune.
"Bad Moon Rising."
"If you say so."
Blake wouldn't know it, but Reese was a big Creedence Clearwater Revival fan.
"Thanks for your help, Trudy.
I'll go take a look at the footprints and the powder."
He stood and started after Blake, who was already heading to the door. Trudy caught his hand.
"You found her yet?"
"No."
"And you won't," his grandmother said. "A woman like that can just disappear. She was never worthy of David. It was good riddance when she disappeared."
"Not for me."
Wrong thing to say, and he knew it.
"She could wrap men around her finger like yarn. You're just as stupid as your father."
She waved her hand.
"Go ahead. Get out of here. You're dying to escape."
Matt's guilt wouldn't let him just walk away. He brushed a kiss across her hair and inhaled her suave hairspray. The scent reminded him of a time when he was lost and afraid. He wasn't that little boy anymore.
10. You see windmills at many Amish homes. They're used to bring water up. The windmill quilt is a quaint reminder that God provides all we need. Hannah Schwartz, in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. The bird wall clock in the kitchen chirped the time. Nearly midnight, Friday. No wonder the quilting stitches appeared blurred to Hannah's tired eyes. The cats curled up at her feet added to her sleepiness. She had wandered through Nora's house looking at the quilts. Some were so worn and threadbare they made her wince. Quilts should be treated with care. One had been tossed carelessly over a chest, and she folded it up and laid it in a chair. The ones she recognized as her mother's handiwork, she'd caressed. The memories were almost more than she could bear. She'd wanted to talk to her aunt about her strange comments, but her aunt was tight-lipped and tearful with the funeral looming tomorrow. Hannah, too, found it hard to concentrate, since Mo's body reposed in the traditional white clothing in the closed dining room. The coroner had released his body yesterday for burial, and they'd been busy with preparations and visitors. She'd heard a creak on the steps and glanced up. With a long gray braid over one shoulder and dressed in a pink nightgown, her aunt swayed at the foot of the steps. She came toward Hannah with a book in her hand.
"I'm sorry I was so bad-tempered tonight," she said.
"I was so shocked when the detective took away the flowers. They'd been delivered to me while I was visiting my friends down the road. Mo must have smelled them when he put them in water. It should have been me who died."
She shook her head. But God's will be done.
Can I get you anything? Warm milk, tea? She offered, even though she knew she shouldn't.
Nora settled onto the sofa beside her.
I'm fine, or at least as fine as I can be.
She fingered the quilt block.
Really lovely stitching, Hannah.
Not as good as my mother's.
Nora smiled.
Ah, your mother.
I couldn't have loved her more if she'd been my own sister. I still miss her.
She examined the stitches more closely.
You're every bit as good, my dear. You must love it like Patricia did.
I do. It's my way of holding on to my mother,
Hannah whispered. She'd never admitted to anyone what fueled her obsession.
Your mother always said it was her way of making sense of the chaos in the world.
Nora pointed to the basket on the floor. Looking at the jumble of fabric and thread, there seems to be no pattern, no order there. But little by little, quilting brings order.
You're right. Maybe that's why it calms me.
Hannah wanted to bring up all her questions, but worried over her aunt's fragility.
What pattern are you working on?
It's a triangle. She showed her aunt the brightly pieced square. I use black fabric for the background and border, just like Mom always did.
This one is supposed to be photographed for the cover of a pattern quilt book I'm writing. It will illustrate the three things important to our way of life.
It's beautiful.
Her aunt's hand stroked the fabric.
I'm very proud of you.
Pain encased Hannah's heart. No one had said those words to her since her parents died.
Reese had been quick to point out her failings, and praise from the museum was scanty until her book came out, and she'd been catapulted into fame. She didn't feel worthy of any praise.
She turned her back on her heritage and fallen into a relationship straight from a suspense movie. Now, here she was, with a failed marriage. Hardly a person to be proud of. But that was her Aunt Nora. She saw the best in everyone.
Maybe that was why the success of her book frightened her.
Hannah put down her quilt block and reached for her bag. She pulled out the picture of the child.
This picture you sent me. Look at the quilt she's sitting on.
Nora carried it closer to the sputtering gaslight.
It's hard to see. What is it I'm looking for?
I recognize the quilt. It's the one Mam was working on the week she died.
Oh, Hannah, my dear, are you sure?
The sunshine and shadow quilt isn't uncommon. Her aunt's eyes held strain when she passed the picture back.
I'm positive. I helped her choose the colors.
It was the last quilt her mother had finished, and Hannah's favorite. Mam called this her almost Amish quilt. Her aunt took another look at the picture.
Because of the yellow in it.
She loved to push past a bit of tradition. The design radiated green, turquoise, yellow, and red against a navy background.
She let me decide which colors to set against one another, and she let me buy some yellow fabric for it, even though it's not a normal color for us.
Even Hannah could recognize the stubborn tone of her voice, and honestly, was she sure that the quilt was Mam's? She thought she was, but was it wishful thinking? Only finding the child and the quilt would answer those questions.
Nora handed back the picture.
Did you tell Matt?
No.
Why not?
He's a cop. He won't be interested in helping me find the little girl.
Nora patted her hand and settled onto the sofa beside Hannah.
You're not sure this is the same one, are you, dear?
Hannah picked up her quilt block again.
I want to see it to make sure.
She said, Aunt Nora, Reese called me this morning right after I got here. He said he has our daughter and that he's raising her Amish. He said he's converted. I think he's lying. Oh, I'm so confused. Are you up to talking?
I thought that's what we were doing.
Her aunt laid her book beside her on the sofa.
I know you've been dying to ask me about what I know about the little girl and Mo's death.
There are things you need to know, Hannah. A powerful enemy isn't through with his family yet. When the letter came, I went to see.
Before her aunt could finish, the window glass beside the sofa shattered. Shards of glass spilled out onto the wooden floor. The cats yowled and ran for the kitchen.
Hannah and her aunt jumped up and turned to look as a glass bottle shattered and burst into flame. The fire spread quickly from the accelerant. The extinguisher! Her aunt ran to grab a fire extinguisher in the kitchen, then returned to smother the fire. Hannah called 911 from her cell phone as she roused Angie from sleep. Hours later, the fire department and the sheriff's department left, and the women wearily cleaned up the soggy mess. The burn marks on the floor couldn't be hidden, but they mopped up the water and scrubbed away the soot in preparation for the funeral only hours away. None of them had heard or seen anything to indicate who had tried to torch the house, but Hannah feared she knew. Reese. He was sending her a warning that he'd found her, and that anyone who stood between the two of them would suffer the consequences. Smoke still lingered in the air from the ordeal the night before. Hannah slept restlessly in the old bed, the single window in the room looking out over the Indiana hills. She was back in her hometown, yet she wasn't part of her family, her people. Did she even want to be? Her life here was a lifetime ago. She coiled her thick braid at the nape of her neck. She'd forgotten how hard it was to see in the small mirror that only showed part of her head. Her gaze stared back, and she wondered who that woman was. She didn't know anymore. Angie spoke from behind her. "Do I look okay? I have no idea since this place only has that teeny mirror. What's up with that?" Hannah turned. Her friend's black skirt touched the top of stylish boots, the lacy black top plunged farther than Hannah ever wanted to wear again. But it looked good on Angie. "You look lovely." "We don't hold with vanity. A full-length mirror would encourage us to put too much emphasis on our appearance." "Yeah, but I can't even tell if my slip is showing." Angie twirled on heels high enough to give her a nosebleed. "Not a sliver of it." Hannah gave her hair a last pat. "You sure you want to wear that old shapeless thing?" Angie pulled on the loose waist of Hannah's dress. "It's like a gunny sack." Her aunt had hung one of Hannah's old dresses in the bedroom closet, and she'd put it on. She looked down at the plain blue dress. "You're right. I think I'll change. The bishop might think I intend to confess at the next meeting." Besides, it seemed she was a girl again, and the clothing brought back the horror of the night she'd found the bodies of her family. She stepped past two twin beds with no headboards. They were neatly made up with white sheets and blankets. She opened the closet, her hand hovering over a plain black dress with three-quarter-length sleeves, so severe and unflattering. Was it a sin to want to look nice? She tried to cover up after the way Reese made her dress, but maybe she'd gone too far. After changing her shoes to low pumps, she defiantly added a simple locket to the outfit. Her family and Frids would think she was a heathen for wearing the jewelry, but she needed some space from them, and this would create it. Angie shook her head. "It's better, but sheesh, Anna. I wish you'd let me take you shopping sometime. You've got a terrific figure, great hair and skin, and you do nothing to enhance your assets. I know you think you need to look the part of a matronly quilt expert, but you're only 32. Live a little." "Reese used to make me wear slinky dresses that plunged to my navel and high heels," she said. Her skin still burned at the memory of the way men looked at her. "You're kidding. You? I hated them." Hannah smoothed her skirt with her hand. "Has Aunt Nora come out yet?" "Nope, not a peep from her room." "I'll check on her." Hannah went to her aunt's closed doorway down the hall off the living room. There was no sound from the other side. She tiptoed to the door and listened. Nothing. Rapping her knuckles softly against the wood, she called to her aunt. At first, she thought the older woman would ignore the summons, but the door finally opened. Her aunt was fully dressed in her usual dark blue dress and sensible shoes. The prayer bonnet looked a bit askew, but her features were composed as she tucked a hanky up her sleeve. "We should probably go down. Everyone will be arriving." Hannah nodded and followed her aunt downstairs. Buggies were beginning to pull into the drive, dozens of them. Men hauled in backless benches and lined them up around the living and dining rooms and the kitchen. Women carried covered dishes for after the burial. Her back erect Aunt Nora accepted their handshakes and thoughtful words. An hour later, they were all assembled. Hannah followed her aunt to the dining room and sat on the bench beside her. Moe's coffin was a plain pine box. The split top was hinged, and the upper portion of it had been folded back to reveal Moe's face. Hannah clasped her hands together as the usher seated people on the benches. She barely noticed Sarah and the girls come in. Luca would grieve that he'd missed the funeral. He likely didn't even know yet. He had no phone with him. Angie sat on the bench behind Hannah and her aunt. Hannah turned around and whispered to Angie that they would sit through a regular church service, not a real funeral as the English knew it. The bishop removed his hat, and in unison the other men in the line of ministers removed theirs, as did all the men in the house. The bishop began to speak, an exhortation from the Old Testament. Preparation for death was the main theme of the sermon, and that theme was continued 30 minutes later by the second minister. When he was done, the minister read Moe's obituary in German, then dismissed the men to prepare for the viewing. In spite of the number of people attending, the rearrangement went forward in near silence. The house emptied of mourners, and the men carried the coffin to the entry. Friends and neighbors filed past Moe to say their goodbyes. Several people nodded to Nora and murmured condolences as they left to get in their buggies and go to the graveyard. Hannah whispered to Angie that she wanted to go to the gravesite in a buggy. Slipping away from the crowd, she hurried to the barn and hitched up a spry black horse to Moe's single-seater. She waited until the last of the buggies pulled out, then fell into the line behind them. She needed to be alone to think. Life had come at her too fast in the past week, and with it, memories of her earlier life in this place. Was it as idyllic as she remembered? She believed it was, and she mourned the loss of her innocence. With her thoughts swirling, she fell behind the rest of the buggies. The sky darkened, and rain began to patter onto her head. It grew nearly as dark as dusk. The air took on a greenish cast, and she feared a tornado might be in the swirling clouds. She slapped the reins on the horse's rump, and he picked up the pace. As the rain fell harder, she wished her people believed in buggy coverings. She could barely see the road with the water dripping in her eyes. A dark shape loomed ahead in the downpour, and she realized a car without lights was bearing down on her. Did the driver see her? She directed the horse to the side of the road and kept going forward, but the car swerved toward her side of the road. She couldn't see the make or model, just the shape coming closer. It was going to hit her, and her gut told her it was a deliberate move. She didn't want the horse to be harmed, but didn't know what to do. Then she saw a path cut into the newly planted field of corn. Just as she turned the horse into the path, the car brushed by so closely that it rocked her buggy. Perspiration popped out on her forehead, and her hands began to shake. All she could see were the taillights flashing as the car slowed at the next intersection and went on. Someone had tried to hit her. She gulped back her fear and backed the buggy out of the lane to continue on to the gravesite. The sun began to peek through the clouds as she finished the trip. She'd be late and a bedraggled rat, but she was alive. Still shaking, she stopped the buggy behind the long line and stepped down into the mud. She realized she was right in front of the graves of her parents. Plain wooden stakes marked their sites. There were no flowers on any of the graves, and she longed to put just a single carnation on her mother's. She loved beautiful flowers so much. Keeping them from her didn't seem right. Did Mom ever regret her decision to join the Amish church? It wasn't done very often. It helped that her parents were German, and she was already bilingual. But she gave up so much for that. Hannah wished she could talk to her mother's family, but the brief glimpse of her aunt and cousin at the funeral had been her only contact with them. Maybe she could find them again. Aunt Nora might know how to contact Aunt Kathy and Mary. Had Reese really converted to the Amish faith? And if he had, where did that leave her? She couldn't go back to him. What if Reese was indeed behind everything? Her parents' death, the fire at Aunt Nora's, the attempt on her life. Or was it her bitterness blinding her? Could she be wrong about Reese? But no, she'd felt his hand shoving her down the steps. A man who would do that was capable of anything. Her hatred swelled. Hannah saw Angie's car parked along the road and waved to her. Angie jogged over to join her.
"What happened to you?" she asked. "You look like a drowned kitten."
"Someone tried to run me off the road." Hannah told Angie what had happened, and immediately her publicist wanted to call Matt.
"I don't want to spoil the funeral. We'll go see him later."
They stood on the edge of the crowd. Hannah tried to be as inconspicuous as possible. A blue Saturn rolled to a stop in the line of vehicles, and a woman got out. A sense of déjà vu rolled over her when she recognized her cousin Mary. 10 years older now, Mary had lost the fresh bloom of her early 20s. Her auburn hair was cut short, and the style did nothing to flatter her face. She'd gained a few pounds as well, and the blouse she wore strained across her stomach. Hannah stepped out to meet her.
"Mary, I don't know if you remember me. I'm Hannah."
The other woman smiled.
"It would be hard to mistake you, since we look so much alike."
"Is your mother here, too?"
Hannah remembered how her mother and Aunt Kathy also resembled each other. Mary fell into step beside Hannah, and they moved toward the throng of people around the grave.
"No, she's in Maine again. After your parents were killed, I ended up moving here to Indiana. I read about Moe's death in the paper and thought I'd come pay my respects. I know he's not a direct relative, but I still feel part of the Amish side of the family.
I thought you left town."
"I did. I came back for a visit a few days ago. Where are you living? I'll stop by if you don't mind."
Mary gave her the address.
"I'd love that."
"Are you married? Have kids?"
When the question sprang from her lips, Hannah wondered if the child she sought might be Mary's.
"Nope, no husband or kids."
A shadow darkened Mary's eyes. They rejoined Angie at the edge of the crowd. The interment service proceeded without incident, but watching Nora's pain hurt Hannah. It was all she could do to stand back and let closer family comfort Aunt Nora. Mary had to get back to work after the service, and Hannah promised to visit. Once her cousin got in her car and drove off, Hannah wanted to do the same.
"I can't eat with them," she told Angie. "I don't want to embarrass Aunt Nora or Sarah."
"Let's go to the jail. I need to see Matt and tell him what happened on the road." She told her aunt they were leaving, then she had Angie follow her to return the horse and buggy to her aunt's house. Once she cared for the horse, she and Angie headed for Rockville. When they got there, 15 minutes later, Hannah stood 5 feet away from the car, staring at the big, boxy building. The jail repelled her, reminded her of the questioning she'd endured 10 years ago. She could still smell the cleaning solution used in the room where she'd been grilled for 4 hours, and the scent made her stomach churn. What made her think they'd help her now? She glanced down at the picture in her hand. The little girl smiled up at her, but the gap-toothed grin failed to move her. This couldn't be her child. The wind ruffled Hannah's hair, swirling it around in her face as a sign that she shouldn't go in. Confusion gripped her. She retreated to the car and put her hand on the door handle. The best thing was to get back in the car and not draw attention to herself.
"Hannah, what the heck? I thought you wanted to talk to Matt."
"I probably imagined the whole thing. Now that I think about it, I'm sure it was an accident, and this whole daughter thing is probably a mirage."
Angie pointed her red-tipped finger at her.
"You get right back in there and talk to him. We haven't come all this way not to pursue every avenue."
"You're right.
I know you're right."
Hannah turned and forced herself to march to the door and yank it open. The jail smelled like someone's roast beef sandwich. Matt walked past the deputy manning the front desk and proceeded down the narrow hallway to his cramped office, last room on the left. Blake followed him. The guy whistled through his teeth, and the annoying ditty set Matt on edge.
"Hey, Beitler,"
a young deputy called.
"The Rockville police reported a big heist from the Ace Hardware store. The alarm wasn't triggered, and we've gotten out of."
Great. The rash of break-ins was getting worse. He wondered, for the umpteenth time, if it was an inside job. Someone smart had been pulling the robberies. He pushed away his doubts about Blake and stalked on to his office. Attending the funeral had been a waste of time. He'd seen nothing suspicious and caught only one glimpse of Hannah. She hadn't seen him. He dropped into the chair behind his overflowing desk and pulled his keyboard to him. Calling up the files, he ignored Blake, who was pacing the room.
The white powder at Trudy's was insecticide dust, nothing lethal to a person, Matt said. But the flowers that were delivered to Nora Honegger were loaded with poison. So far, we haven't been able to discover what florist delivered them. The box they came in was in the trash, but it was plain white cardboard with no business name.
Leaning back in the chair, he flipped open the file containing the printouts of what they knew so far.
The funeral was this morning. I went for a little while. Some people from town came, but it was mostly Amish.
Blake finally quit pacing and came to sit on the other side of the desk.
I think it's a family member.
Of course you do, a female voice said from the doorway. Matt looked up to see Hannah standing in the hall. Her cheeks were flushed and her golden brown eyes sparked with fire. Her hair looked wet, and so did her clothes. With that Titian hair, she probably had trouble hanging on to her temper.
You have something to say?
She advanced into the room. The black dress only partially concealed her figure, and he wondered if it shamed her that she was so beautiful. He realized he was enjoying seeing her agitation.
You've trained your partner well, she said. He's just as quick to jump to conclusions as you.
The murderer is generally someone close to the victim,
he said.
We are Amish. We abhor violence.
She pointed to the computer.
If you look through your files, I doubt you'll find a single case of one of us breaking the law. No one in our community killed Mo or my family.
Are you okay? He asked, when he realized she was shaking. He thought more than anger lay beneath her nerves.
Someone tried to run me down in the buggy.
He stiffened.
Why didn't you call me? What did the vehicle look like?
It was during the storm, and the rain was coming down too hard for me to tell.
She gripped the back of a chair, and her voice grew steadier.
Maybe I'm jumping to conclusions. It could have been an accident. But I tried to move out of the way, and the vehicle matched me.
The next time something like this happens, call me.
Blake's cell phone rang.
I'll be back in a minute.
He disappeared through the door. Matt kept his gaze on Hannah.
There's not much I can do without a description of the car. But you need to be careful.
She nodded, the hectic red in her cheeks draining away.
I came for another reason, too.
She swallowed hard. There was something so vulnerable about her that Matt wished he didn't have to question her. His job was to push and prod until he got at the truth, and he knew there was a lot she held back. Getting at it might hurt her.
So what's up?
She blinked, exhaled, then slowly opened her bag. Rummaging inside, she withdrew a photo and held it out.
I wonder if you've seen this little girl.
A child?
Matt took the slick paper. His sweet daughter's face looked back at him, and he almost smiled.
Where did you get this?
He tried to think of what Caitlin might have done. Thrown rocks? Darted in front of her? He lifted his coffee cup to his lips. She bit her lip.
Reese sent it. He says it's our daughter.
Matt choked on the sip of hot liquid.
Wait. Let me get this straight. You've never seen this girl before, yet you say it's your daughter.
How is that possible? He looked down at Caitlin again.
It was Caitlin, wasn't it?
She didn't look at him, but rushed on. I was pregnant, and Reese wasn't happy about it. About 2 weeks before the baby was due, he shoved me down the stairs. I just remember pain and coming in and out of consciousness. When I finally woke up, he told me the baby girl had died.
Matt found it hard to get his mind around what she was saying.
A shiver of fear tickled his spine.
And now he's saying the baby didn't die, that this child is that baby.
She nodded. I left him as soon as I found out. I thought that was the end of it until I got this picture last week. I want to find my daughter, she said with a stubborn tilt to her chin.
No way.
Maybe Reese had seen a picture of Caitlin and recognized the resemblance, then chosen to use it. It was impossible her daughter was his baby girl.
When was this?
He asked, before he could stop himself. 5 years ago, April 14th. the day before Annalise had found a tiny bundle on their front porch. Horror stopped his tongue. He wouldn't believe it. He swallowed hard and managed to feign indifference.
And you believe him? Maybe he's just yanking your chain.
She nodded. He might be trying to hurt me. He says if I come back to him, I can have her back. He says he's raising her Amish up in Shipshawana. But this little girl is dressed English, so it's hard to believe what he's telling me.
Matt forced himself to breathe, to act naturally. He couldn't let on how upset he was. At least, he knew it was all a lie.
I think he's bluffing.
He knew he should tell her, but he had to know more first. His child's future hung in the balance. Tears hung on her lashes. He called me yesterday, and I heard her voice. She sounded darling.
Reese had taped Caitlin's voice?
Maybe Gina wasn't overreacting, and someone had been following her. Maybe Reese had seen Caitlin and realized how much she looked like Hannah. He might have seen this as a way of getting to her. Matt had to gain some time, figure out what to do. No one was taking his daughter.
You think he's in town?
I'm sure of it. He sent me this picture to flush me out so he could find me.
I'll try to find him. Talk to him.
She shook her head. He's crafty. He won't tell you anything. But can we look for the child?
What makes you think she's in Indiana?
He was total slime to try to confuse her. See here? She handed the picture back to him. There's a covered bridge in the background. He peered at the picture.
She was right. He remembered the picnic by the bridge, too, just a month ago on an unusually warm April day. That doesn't say for sure it's here. There are covered bridges in other places.
Yes, but look at the name on the bridge. It's the one by my cousin's house, the Narrows Bridge. So we need to start here.
By some miracle, he kept his voice steady. There's no crime yet. I'm not sure what you expect me to do.
Isn't it a crime to steal a baby from her mother? Her voice rose. How about murdering a child?
You don't know this little girl is even yours, and did you ever press charges against Reese?
He didn't even have to wait for her to shake her head. Of course she didn't. She'd simply walked away from him like so many battered wives without making him pay for what he'd done.
So we have no proof of anything.
Then what do I do?
I'll find Reese and talk to him.
He waved the picture in the air.
But I think you're chasing a dream. This little girl probably just has red hair.
He had to believe it for his own sanity, to keep panic from sweeping him away. I understand that. But I have to do something. I have to find her, discover the truth for myself. He nodded.
I'll keep you posted. Give me your cell phone number.
As she dug for a pen and paper, he glanced at the photo again. His blood ran cold at the thought that Reese had been watching his baby. The man had to be somewhere nearby, and Matt would find him, force him to tell the truth, force him to go away and leave them all alone. 11. Take a look at the Amish Bars quilt. Less is more in the quilt and in the Amish way of life. They're able to escape the plague of materialism sweeping the country. Hannah Schwartz, in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. Angie had the radio turned up and was singing along when Hannah got back to the car. Perspiration trickled along the back of her neck, and her pulse still raced from the effort to convince Matt to help her. If she'd had anywhere else to turn, she wouldn't have gone to him. The smile on Angie's face faltered when she saw Hannah.
It didn't go well?
That man could make a bishop swear. Hannah slammed the door behind her and fastened her seatbelt as Angie laughed. He's going to look around, but he's still looking at our community for the murderer, just like he did when my family died. One of us was his first assumption. I thought he might have learned something, grown up some.
Angie started the car and pulled into the line of traffic.
Don't you watch CSI? It's generally someone close to the victim. He's just following standard procedure. But does he have to be so obnoxious about it? I want to talk to my aunt, but not while she's so upset. She seems to know something about this. Well, you can do that later. Publishers Weekly called and you have a phone interview with them in an hour and a half. They want a quick quote from you for an article they're running on why Amish books are so popular. Hannah wanted to shake her head and refuse, but Angie was just doing her job. Angie, I don't want to do any promotion while I'm here. Please don't schedule anything more. Angie didn't seem to hear. We've got to maximize the opportunity while we can. I plan to call some women's magazines next and set up photo shoots here in the area where they can see you interacting with the Amish. No, absolutely not. No photos here. You know the Amish don't like their pictures taken. They don't tolerate graven images or vanity. The very thought made Hannah want to pace. If her family were fully aware of her fame, their disapproval would soar. When had she so fully disassociated herself from the concept of Hochmut? Her family had a horror of elevating themselves into the limelight, but she'd welcomed it when it had come. Perhaps she had even been a bit prideful of her success. No wonder the bishop warned against how easily worldly ways could creep in. They reached the turnoff to Nora's farm, and from the corner of her eye, Hannah saw a truck go by. The man's head swiveled, and their eyes locked. It was Reese. She saw recognition come into his face, and he smiled. Step on it, Angie! Quick! Her pulse thundered in her ears. 5 years wasn't long enough to get rid of the metallic taste of terror that came at the first glimpse of his face. Who is it? Angie stomped on the gas. She did a U-turn in the middle of the road and sped away in the opposite direction. Hannah peeked over the top of the seat behind them. He's turning around to follow us. Angie accelerated. Is it Reese? Yes. Hannah barely breathed. Go back to town and we'll go to Matt. She glanced behind them. Reese had nearly caught up to them. Get out of here! The tan truck stayed on their trail. There's a little lane around the next curve. It goes across a covered bridge. There's a thick hedge on the other side. Maybe we can hide there. Angie held to the wheel with both hands. Call Matt. The car went airborne over a hump in the road, but Angie maintained control. Hannah grabbed for her purse and dug out her cell phone. The battery's dead. Get mine! Hannah looked around for her friend's bag. Where's your purse? Angie groaned. It's in the trunk. They crested the hill, and Hannah kept her gaze glued on the truck behind them. She lost sight of it as they went down the hill. Right there, Hannah said, pointing out the narrow lane. Angie spun the steering wheel, and the car plunged down the overgrown road. They entered the covered bridge, the dark coolness a haven. The tires rumbled over the wooden planks. Then they were out the other side. Still, no sign of the truck. Hannah directed Angie to the thick copse of trees and shrubs where she used to play with her siblings. Angie ran the windows down and turned the key to off. The sound of the engine died, and Hannah heard the chatter of birds overhead and, in the distance, the whine of a vehicle tearing down the hill. She caught her breath and waited. Would he notice the turnoff? He'd grown up around here, too, and he might remember this place. She opened the car door and peered through the foliage hiding them. A flash of metal showed through the other side of the covered bridge. A tire thunked on wood. He's coming! Panic closed her throat, and she looked wildly around for some place to hide. Get back in the car. I'll get us out of here. Angie started the car. Hannah jumped back inside and closed the door with as little sound as possible. She didn't put her seatbelt on in case she would have to jump and run to escape Reese. The thought of him laying hands on her again made her head swim. She pushed away the weakness. Never again would she let a man hurt her like he had. Holding her breath, she watched the truck rumble past up the narrow dirt road. Maybe he thought they'd cut through to the other road that way. Hang on, she said. Maybe he won't see us. But even as she spoke, she saw his brake lights flash. He spotted us. Angie accelerated away from their hiding spot and back onto the covered bridge. You sure this bridge is built to take us running back and forth? She muttered. Plunging into the river would be better than facing Reese again. Hannah turned in her seat to peer behind them. Yes. Would she ever really escape him? The car emerged from the bridge into the sunlight. Back to town, she said. Let's try to make it to the jail. Angie's speedometer hit 70 by the time they crested the hill. The truck followed them, gaining every second. Faster! Hannah cried. Her pulse battered the flesh in her throat. It seemed inevitable that she would have to face Reese. Maybe now was the time.
"I've got the accelerator clear to the floor."
The city limit was just ahead. "We're almost there." The truck gained on them until their bumpers were almost touching. Angie made a sharp turn down the street toward Matt's office, even running a red light. The truck didn't manage the turn, though the tire squealed as it tried. Angie turned at the next street and wove around until they were in front of the jail. Just as she slammed on the brakes and parked, Reese's truck came from a side street. He pulled in behind them and ran his windows down.
"Are you okay, hon? We need to talk,"
he called. "I'm not going to hurt you."
Hannah's hands shook, and she trembled all over. She threw open the door and tottered out. Breathing deeply, she tried to gather enough strength to run into the building. She couldn't bear to look at his face. The car door slammed behind her. Then Angie was at her side, taking her elbow.
"Let's get inside."
She turned and faced Reese. "I've gotten a restraining order on you. Get out of here before you're arrested."
Hannah dared a peek at him. He had a beard coming in. It was about an inch long. Was it to give weight to his lie about converting to the Amish faith? She could see the slash of dark suspenders against the white shirt he wore. He waved and accelerated out of the parking lot.
"You'll have to talk to me sooner or later, Hannah."
The words rang through the open window before his tire squealed on the pavement and the truck zoomed away. Hannah's shaking began to wane, and anger took its place. He couldn't do this to her, not anymore. Men like Reese always got away with their crimes, and she could have kicked herself now that it was over. She'd let her fear drive her. If only she'd mastered it and confronted him, maybe she would know more about the little girl. She needed to find some backbone. Matt studied the women. Both were clearly shaken. Hannah was pale, and she stood twisting her hands together. Tears pooled in her eyes. Even her friend Angie paced the sidewalk, her black hair bouncing and her brows drawn together as though she wanted to bite someone. She stopped and pointed a red-tipped finger at him.
"So, officer, what are you going to do to protect Hannah from that madman?"
He thought about correcting her. Detective. He'd fought hard for that title.
"I'll put out a warrant for his arrest. Bring him in and talk to him."
"Talk to him? What good will that do? Talk rolls off the back of a man like him. You're just protecting him because he's one of you."
Matt spread his hands out, palms up.
"He's not one of us. We'll bring him in and tell him he can't break the restraining order."
His gut said Hannah needed protection. He had one dead body, and he didn't want another murder on his desk.
"I'll arrange for a car to drive by."
Besides, he wanted Reese out of commission and as far away from Caitlin as possible. Hannah tipped up her chin.
"Surveillance isn't going to stop Reese."
Ajax pressed against her leg and whined. She rubbed his ears and her shoulders relaxed.
"It might discourage him," Blake put in.
He put his pen away.
She shook her head. "He has total contempt for law enforcement. He thinks he's above it all because he was a deputy himself once."
"Maybe he still was." "What's he doing now?"
"Last I heard, he was a guard for a big corporation in Detroit. He lost his job on the police force there after he beat up a drunk. If it's true, he joined the Amish church in a district in Shipshawana, which I doubt. He would have to be doing something else."
"Do you believe him?"
he asked her.
She didn't answer right away. When he thought she was going to refuse to talk about it, she finally gave a tiny shrug. "I don't want to believe him, but he might have."
"Why would he do that?"
The man Matt knew hated being told what to do. Matt couldn't see Reese taking orders from a bishop.
"He thinks it would add to the pressure to make me go back to him."
Matt didn't ask her if the pressure would work. The torment on her face made it clear that such a circumstance would make her decision harder.
"So where are you staying?" "You still at your aunt's?"
"Yes, but I don't want to bring more trouble on her head. She has enough with her son's murder and the Molotov cocktail last night."
Hannah glanced down the street.
"I could stay at the bed and breakfast out at the Maple Farm."
"Too remote. And it's probably not good to stay with your aunt either. She's in the middle of nowhere, too."
He thought for a minute. His rental cottage was one block over, with plenty of nosy neighbors. It was empty right now. Digging in his pocket, he pulled out his keys.
I own a rental close to the station. There are two bedrooms and neighbors who would shoot an intruder on sight. You can stay there.
She shifted from one foot to the other and looked down at the keys in his hand. Thank you. I'll pay you for it.
It will only be a few days.
He pressed the key into her hand. It's over on Water Street.
303. White. With blue shutters. Wait, I'd better go with you so the neighbors don't call me to tell me someone has broken into the place.
He walked to his SUV, then got Ajax loaded in the back.
Hope you know what you're doing, partner, Blake said.
You got any other ideas?
She's not your responsibility. We do the best we can.
Matt shot him a look of disgust.
And maybe get another dead body?
I don't understand what's happening yet, but I intend to. Blake shrugged.
We can't play bodyguard for everyone.
You're all heart, Blake.
But what did he expect from a guy who would cheat on his wife? He pushed away the thought of his lies to Hannah. That was different.
Follow me, he told the women.
He got in his vehicle, then waited until they climbed back into their car before leading them the short distance to his house. Parking in front, he saw that the grass needed to be cut and the shutters could use a new coat of paint. Funny how he hadn't noticed until he was bringing guests. He let Ajax out, and the dog raced to sniff at the other car's wheels. Hannah got out of the car, and her gaze swept the house.
It's charming, she sounded surprised.
I'll let you in.
He opened the gate to the picket fence and walked to the door, which he unlocked and pushed open.
After you.
The women stepped past him into the foyer. He had just cleaned it on his day off in hopes of renting it, and he could still smell the Lysol in the air.
Where's your luggage?
At my aunt's.
I'll go get it for you. I don't want Reese following you here.
His mind still raced about how to hide Caitlin now that he knew Hannah was looking for her. And what was Reese's game? By now Reese knew where his sister lived. At least she lived with a sheriff's detective.
Oh, my cats are there too. Hannah bit her lip. I should probably go back there instead.
Cats? I hate cats.
The thought of the sneaky creature strolling through his house made him wince. Can't your aunt keep them for you while you stay here?
She just lost her son. I don't want her to have to worry about them. I need them with me. It will take Reese a while to figure out where we are.
If he's as guilty as you say he is, he might have been the one to throw the Molotov cocktail through the window. Just how many of them are there?
4.
At least she had the grace to look a bit ashamed.
You have plenty of litter and food?
Yes. I brought all their things with me. The stuff is at my aunt's, too.
Now that he looked a little closer, he saw that her eyes were almost cat-like. The golden brown color and the almond shape reminded him of a tabby's eyes. As he'd often told Caitlin, he shoved the thought away.
I'll go get the felines. They can stay here.
Are you sure? Will Ajax be okay with them?
Ajax looked up at the mention of his name and came to sit at Matt's feet.
I'll leave him here for now. Anyway, Ajax loves cats. It's his one flaw.
She smiled then, and he thought she should do it more often. The flash of white teeth and the light in her eyes made him smile back in spite of the way he wished he could boot out the felines.
Maybe I should go with you. They'll be out of sorts in a strange place without me around.
He knew the feeling. Leaving the two women in his house made him want to stalk around and swish his tail, too, if he had one.
I can handle it.
I don't want him watching your aunt's house and following you back here. He stopped to get Blake to help, then drove out to the Honiggers. Buggy still lined the road in the driveway.
I wish we had something new to tell Mrs. Honigger,
he told Blake as he parked and got out. He nodded to several Amish men sitting around smoking on the front porch. Another woman came to the door when he knocked. Then Mrs. Honigger pushed through the crowd to step out onto the porch with him and Blake.
May I help you? She asked.
I apologize. We don't have any news yet, ma'am.
We wait on the Lord's will, son.
We plan to see justice done, Mrs. Honigger. I'll track down the killer.
When you do, let me know. I need to go to his family.
Did she plan a tongue-lashing?
Why do you want to see his family, ma'am?
I will accept this from the Lord's hand, young man. I've already forgiven the one who did this, and I want to comfort his family.
Matt didn't understand how she could be so calm and accepting of what had happened, but her attitude intrigued him.
I'm here for another reason. Your niece and her friend were followed today by Reese O'Connor, and someone tried to run Hannah down in the buggy on her way to the gravesite. I'm having them stay at a home close to the sheriff station.
Mrs. Honegger put her hand to her mouth. Hannah, is she all right?
She's fine. She escaped without incident.
Oh, dear, I need to talk to Hannah. Explain what's happening.
The woman literally wrung her hands. I should never have sent her the picture.
Tell me, do you know who threw the explosive through your window?
She looked up at him, her brow smoothing.
I'll talk to Hannah. It's not your concern. It's a family matter.
If you know something, it's your duty to tell me.
I'll talk to Hannah only.
He scribbled down the address and phone number where Hannah was staying.
Here's her contact information. Don't wait too long. I believe she's in danger.
He pressed it into her hand.
I'm here to get her luggage. And cats.
Relief flooded her face. They've dug up my flower bed trying to get some poor chipmunk.
You let them outside?
He had a vision of trying to corral four cats. It wasn't pretty.
I had no choice. They stood at the door and meowed until I wanted to cry.
She stepped through the door and he followed.
Their carriers are on the back porch.
He saw them stacked on the corner.
I'll get them.
He grabbed two.
Might as well get started.
One black cat with white paws sat licking its paws in the flower bed. He approached with caution.
Hey there, kitty.
The animal looked up with obvious disdain in its green eyes. Matt set the animal containers on the ground and opened the doors.
Want to go see Hannah?
He rolled his eyes at his own stupidity. Like the dumb things could understand. To his surprise, the feline gave one last lick, then calmly walked into the closest cage and curled into a ball. He clicked the door into place before the cat could change its mind. Glancing around, he spied a white cat under a blooming crabapple tree. He scooped up the second carrier and walked toward the cat. The animal scampered away and leaped onto a branch about face high, where it hunkered down among the white blossoms that gave off a sweet scent. He set the cage down, then scooped up the cat. It meowed and squirmed, but he managed to stuff it inside and get the gate closed. When he turned around, Blake came toward him with the other carriers.
I've got them, he said.
Matt caught a glimpse of a calico face and a ginger tabby. At least he didn't have to chase them down. Once they loaded the cats and the girl's luggage in the SUV, he nodded toward the woods.
Let's take another look around while we're here.
He ran the windows down and headed out back. The crime scene tape still marked off the area in the clearing. He ducked under it and glanced at the spot where they'd found the body. The technicians would have gone over that area with a fine-tooth comb, but maybe something else was here. Birds scolded from overhead as the men picked their way through the underbrush. He caught a glimpse of movement between the leaves.
Hey!
He yelled. A man's face peered through the foliage. Ruddy cheeks bloomed above his black beard laced with gray. Matt guessed him to be about 40. Dressed in jeans and a bright red shirt to alert hunters to his presence, he stepped from the concealing bushes and came toward them with a backpack slung over one shoulder and a GPS unit in the other. A woman about the same age followed. Her jeans had muddy patches on the knees, and she wore a red long-sleeved blouse. Her long hair, streaked with white, held twigs and leaves. A plethora of patches covered their vests. Once he got nearer, Matt recognized the man as the geocacher who'd found Moe's body, Kevin Brainerd.
"Is there a problem, detective?"
Kevin asked. He stood with his feet planted apart.
"You live near here?"
Matt asked. Kevin shook his head.
"Me and my wife." He thrust a thumb at the woman. "We got a place on the other side of the county." "I'm surprised you're back over here, considering what you found the other day."
Kevin shifted and glanced at his wife.
With all the hoopla, we never found the cash we were looking for.
Did you know the victim? Matt asked. Another quick glance at his wife.
Well, we bought vegetables from his mom every summer, and we talked to him occasionally.
Find your cash this time?
Kevin smiled then.
Yep, a nice assortment of coins and DVDs. We took a coin.